The most pressing challenges facing the federal government can be complex and often require the work that cuts across many agencies. The idea of smart power is to harness the nation's collective strength to help solve these problems. It's not so easy. John Allen and Cheryl Steele are senior associates at Booz Allen Hamilton. They've released a paper on how to move smart power from theory into action. And they are joining us on this show right now. John Allen, Cheryl Steele. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. Good morning.
So first of all, tell us, what do you mean by the word smart power?
Well, smart power is really about looking across agency divides. It's about pulling together the elements of diplomacy, defense, and development, sort of all the tools of national security policy in order to affect outcomes.
So everybody working together then on one particular problem, cross agencies, cross cultures.
Exactly.
And I think it even goes beyond that. A lot of times we hear about whole of government with diplomacy, defense, and development. And what's special with smart power is that the government even looks externally to its own walls. How do you work with public-private partnerships? How do you work with the international community and the NGOs?
Well, let's try to put this into some realistic format. Give us an example of a problem that requires multi-agency work to collaborate to fix.
Sure. I think this week we just saw something released that talks about that straight up. This path was the new international strategy for cyberspace. If you actually look at the strategy, it calls out specifically that not one organization in the government can actually can deal with this problem. It's a diplomacy, defense, and development issue, as well as cutting across the international community and our public-private partners both here in the U.S. and overseas. So that's a recent development that's occurred that we see the government coming straight out and highlighting these pillars that you have to do to deal with a complex issue.
We're hearing more about interagency cooperation. We're also hearing more about public-private partnerships. But why is this taking so long to catch on? Why have we been doing this all along?
Well, I think the biggest issue is that it isn't easy. There are challenges in collaboration, and there's also challenges in terms of the individual pillar organizations and participant parts thinking outside of their organizational mandate. So we're sort of asking organizations and people within those organizations to challenge their standard way of doing business, and I think that's part of what we're seeing in terms of getting this to get off the ground and really move forward in implementation.
Now, over the years, various managerial approaches have universally stressed, well, you can't get this done without top management, without leadership from the very top. You've heard that, and I'm sure that's true in this case. But in the case of government, the very top management maybe is the president or the vice president, and they can't be involved in every single little thing. So how can one agency, how can leadership assert itself to make sure that this collaboration actually happens?
I agree. It is very personality driven at times, and this administration has really shown that they do want to do this with a number of statements that both the Secretary of State and the Secretary Gates have said. A lot of this is empowering your managers on down. This is a big cultural and people issue of giving opportunities for organizations to work closely together. I think the difference here is what we've seen over the last 10 years in our own government with two wars simultaneously going on that have required organizations to work together. So we're seeing more leaders over the last 10 years work within these environments at a micro level, which are now starting to flow up to a more senior leadership level as they grow in their careers.
We're talking with senior associates at Booz Allen Hamilton, John Allen and Cheryl Steele, and we're talking about their paper concerning smart power. Are those the obstacles then, the cultural and the logistical obstacles to making this smart power theory into a reality? I mean, how do you make that move?
I think part of this is indeed the cultural piece. Part of it is a policy piece. You know, it's one thing to sort of set at the top level, we want to do a whole of government approach. It's another thing to interpret that into the methodologies for collaboration, methods for information sharing, empowerment of individuals within offices. We had done a poll of about 160 or so federal executives a few months back, and exactly what they cited were ineffective lines of communication, a lack of clear interagency policy, and that interagency politics factor. But as we look at the budget, as we look at the realities of being able to demonstrate impact of policies, I think we're going to see this increasing push towards collaboration and coordination.
Yes, because in your paper you also say you have to pick the right problem for this to work. It can't be standard for everything you approach. So what are some good ways to know, hey, this is a problem that I could really get people behind using the smart power techniques?
Well, part of it is we do use a filter test to really analyze the challenges to see if it meets the conditions for a smart power approach. Not every problem that we face in the government requires a full interagency, having every organization in the government come to bear on the problem. So we have a filter test that we really look at the military, political, social, and economics of each problem, and then moving into finding the right team to really bring their resources and their capabilities to bear on the problem. And the last step is really doing a mission integration look, which Cheryl pointed out, around policy, budget, people and culture, technology and operations. So those are the types of steps we look at, is really understanding first what challenges it meets and the conditions.
So the flip side of that then would be that there are some situations out there where this would not be an appropriate attempt at a solution.
Exactly. And I think that is the very important point to underscore. You know, smart power and whole of government approaches are not a panacea or cure-all for every issue that our nation faces. And we do have agencies with specializations for a reason. And part of this is creating the space for people to excel in what their area of expertise is. So if it's something that's formally and clearly in the lanes of the Department of Defense, for example, we're not suddenly going to be asking foreign service officers to move into direct combat operations, would be a good example.
Well, suppose you're a mid-level program manager and you see something that you think, hey, this is big. What should a person like that do to maybe start getting the uppers to say, yeah, you're right?
Yeah, I think with technologies we have nowadays, there's a lot more information sharing platforms we have in the government to enable to find out what capabilities other organizations have and to find out who that person's equal is over in another agency and pushing up to leadership and showing. I think the way to get a leadership attention is with the budget cuts we're seeing today in government, how do you use each other's resources more effectively? And showing really the savings that can occur and also the operational improvement for a certain mission you may have is how mid-level management can really talk to their leaders to show that, you know, using resources in one organization to augment what you're doing actually improves the overall mission.
And can't also a leader that may not feel like being pushed, don't they have the option of using the budget process, which is 18 months in advance, basically, to almost kill anything?
Well, and I think part of the challenge is how do you look at budget opportunities? So what are the things that should be funded? What are the priorities and the justification that you use to continue a line item going forward? And I think as we see this push increasingly to harnessing resources and collaboration, there's the opportunity for those agencies who are proactive, showing this collaboration, showing this bringing of resources to potentially do better as they look at the budget negotiation process.
You were talking about the technology and the platforms that people are able to use to communicate with each other and how that has changed so much just in the past few years. Is that why this is now becoming more of a reality, because of the technology kind of catching up with it?
I think that's one piece of it. Is the technology piece, and our government and organizations are using a lot more information sharing platforms and using what people use in their everyday lives actually now at work. But I also think the dynamics of the last 10 years since 9/11 has required us to do this. I mean, we're in two wars now between Iraq and Afghanistan. We have provincial reconstruction teams working together, interagency processes, and now these leaders on the ground are having to work with these international organizations and these NGOs. So I think it's a combination. It's a lot different world we've seen now in the last 10 years, and then couple that with the technology advances.
And can you think of any recent issues that might have been mitigated or solved using smart power that we could point to and say, hey, it worked here?
Well, I think what you can see, that sort of the ongoing effort is around the space of global health. It's a major transnational issue. It, like cyber, is something that requires tools of all actors, both inside government, multinational donors, NGOs, civil society. And what you can see is a translation from sort of a headquarters, an agency, a policy-level directive in Washington, D.C., to how we see that playing out in the field. So if one is looking at Africa. How do you think about the capabilities around capacity building and institutional strengthening that USAID can bring to bear, together with the expertise around disease control outbreak prevention that CDC can bring? And so I think we're seeing very much at that micro and field level concerted efforts to think sort of strategically about how to blend these resources and let everyone really play to their strengths to a shared outcome.
Now, we're linking to your paper on federalnewsradio.com. What's the next step for this information? Where does it go from here, and what do you want to see happen?
Well, I think it's I think it's actually operationalizing now, going a little bit further. I think the next step needs to be, we see a lot of these approaches be formed during a crisis. So we see a lot of interagency and the cross-culture, the cross-pollination through smart power after a Haiti or after the crisis in Japan or when Libya kicked off. I think the next step is, how do we start these processes before crises actually occur and get it into the planning cycle. Through the Quadrennial Diplomacy Development Review, through the QDR, and then through the International Strategy for Cyberspace, we're seeing the government putting their documents now that we need to think about these processes before crisis happens. So I think that's the next step, is how do we actually get ahead of the curve before an incident actually occurs.